This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Thanks for listening to No Joke with Billy and Adam on the HeadGum Podcast Network, the least topical podcast on the internet.
Today's topic was live television mistakes. We hope you enjoy the No Joke Podcast. Okay, welcome back to the No Joke Podcast. I am Billy Scafuri.
I'm Adam Lustig.
2 weeks in a row, folks.
Yes, we're back on the horse or something.
You know what that means. Back on the horse or something.
or something. Yeah.
What are you? Are you back on the wagon? I think you get on the wagon or off the wagon.
Yeah, that's like if you're like an alcoholic and you quit drinking, but then you start again. One of those is off and one of those is on. I've never totally been clear.
So is that exclusive to alcohol when you're off the wagon? That's exclusively an alcoholic thing.
It's a great question. It might just refer to like a habit, like a habit that you've been doing. It's like, oh, you know, I've been really trying to work out every day, but I kind of fell off the wagon, but now I'm trying to get back on. So it might be just like just referring to any sort of any habit, perhaps.
Even when you say that about like the working out example, which is a good example, it doesn't feel right.
I know.
I think wagon has to do with booze, period.
Wagon, alcoholism has claimed the wagon metaphor. I think it's claimed that. Yeah.
And good for alcoholism. Have your own expression.
Good for that ism. It needs a win. You know what I mean? So give it, you know, alcoholism is tough enough. Give it the wagon metaphor. It can have it. Yeah.
So 2 weeks in a row, Adam.
Yes,
does this mean that we are going to take 6 weeks off? Because
Yeah, exactly.
We had a bad habit of doing one episode and then taking 3 weeks off for whatever reason.
That's
two
right.
Two in a row. Fingers crossed. We keep
okay,
it going.
Fingers crossed. Let's keep the foot on the gas here, bud. Let's do it.
It's episode 376. Episode 375 was Kenzie's dad.
Oh, a delight.
A delight.
A delight. A delight.
And we talked about our friend Kenzie's dad, who every week, every single Friday, they get together, him and his friends at the bar, and he comes equipped with a list of conversation topics that they have to hit. And
talking points. Yeah.
And when we were done with the episode, there was like a moment of reflection for me where I was thought to myself, I was like, are we allowed to do that? It's someone's dad. It's our friend's dad, but it's someone's dad. Like, can you just talk about someone's dad for 45 minutes without asking their permission?
Technically speaking, we did do it without obtaining prior consent from Kenzie or the aforementioned Kenzie's dad. We just sort of forged ahead, and it was the sort of don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness kind of philosophy. But thankfully, Kenzie was, of course, very gracious with her dad's intellectual property. So that was, we were lucky for that. Yeah.
But I was like, podcasters will generally like flag something where they're like, hey, let's edit that out. Like something that they said, one thing that they said. But we just went pedal to the metal, 45 minutes of
full shit.
We have to edit it all out.
But you then followed up with a text from me, which I'm, of course, assuming you heard from Kenzie or maybe Marty, which is that Kenzie's dad was listening to our Kenzie's dad episode of the podcast on a ice fishing trip, potentially with those buddies.
Yes, potentially with those buddies, potentially with his brothers. So I texted Kenzie immediately after, before I even edited the podcast.
Yeah, you were like, is this okay?
Hey, here's a heads up.
Yeah.
We're about to drop 45 minutes of your dad on the feed. Is that okay?
Who doesn't know us? Yeah.
And it's obviously a public story at this point. Like I said, he's been like national news. He has like branded sponsors. So she was like, no, he's going to absolutely love this.
He's going to love
it. Because we did that episode, he learned A, how to listen to a podcast, and B, how Bluetooth works. Because when they were ice fishing, they listened to it on a Bluetooth speaker. So pretty cool.
This is a joy. That image of just like three or four guys out on the frozen lakes of Wisconsin or whatever, just sort of dropping their lines into the water with a little JBL Bluetooth and your and my voices ringing out in the cold Wisconsin morning is really – that's beautiful. That's really beautiful.
That's probably the closest you and I will ever get to ice
fishing. I knew you were going to say that.
Have you ever – there's no way –
Well, Billy, weirdly, one time, my uncle has a house that you've been to on Brant Lake up at the Adirondacks. We would often go up there in the winter. And when I was a young, young lad, my great uncle, my father's uncle, Leslie, my great uncle, Leslie, he did take us ice fishing one time on the frozen Brant Lake. And it was,
like,
I remember
cut
being cool.
The ice? You like cut the hole in the ice?
Yeah, he was like a bit of an experienced ice fisher person, and he had like one of those tools that cuts the perfect circle in thine ice. And so like he did all that.
Over the hole?
No,
I don't
think
it was warm.
No, we were very cold. I remember being very, very cold and wanting it to be over, frankly. I mean, granted, I was probably 7 years old. But it was cool. I also remember it being like peaceful and cool. It didn't catch any fish, obviously, but it was really just about the experience of doing it. But I have not gone ice fishing. I had not been before since. Probably won't. I mean, I don't want to write it off, obviously. But I don't know what the context would be where I would find myself ice fishing.
Do you like fishing?
I haven't been the honest to God truth, Bill, is that I haven't fished enough to even really form a strong feeling about it. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I have, like I said, at my uncle's lake, little rinky dink fishing pole off the dock. That's super fun. Doing it with my brother, doing it with some of the other like family friends that were at his house that weekend. So like I have very fond memories of the experience of fishing. I don't think I've ever caught a fish, frankly. So
really?
I haven't had the thrill of victory in that.
You've
that
never
way,
reeled
I don't
in a fish?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You
have
Billy,
you baited
what are,
a hook? Have you baited? A hook?
Yes, I have. I have baited a hook. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact,
personally, I hate fishing. I hate.
Yeah. Well, you hate fish. Yeah, I get it. I mean, like fish, and you are like oil and water, frankly.
Yeah. I don't like fish, but I really don't like fishing. And it's as much as I don't like fish, I really don't want to see hooks through their freaking faces,
man.
Yeah,
I know.
Like,
there
I eat
like
meat. I'm not like a vegan where it's like, but like, it's something is so intensely, it's hunting.
Intense.
It's hunting.
It is hunting. Yeah, it is hunting. And there's also something really disturbing about catching a fish, getting it into the boat, and it just like essentially suffocate, just like watching it flop and flop and flop and just like suffocate and then die. Yep. It's just like it is. There is a casual violence to fishing that is just like it's like mortal violence wrapped in just sort of like a cozy bonding sort of sweet quaint coziness. But it is killing. Yeah,
and I can appreciate the peace and serenity of being out on the lake or out on the sea for 8 hours with your buddies, have a couple of beers, you're just chilling out, small talk. It's not even about catching the fish, it's just about the peace and quiet. I would just like bring like a Game Boy.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Just play a game. Like find other ways of like winning.
Yeah.
You know,
let's just remove the murder element out of the lake hang. Yeah, it doesn't have to be about murder anymore. We can just we can just talk. Yeah.
But that's just a me and you thing. If Kenzie's dad is listening now, because he knows how podcasts work now. So if Kenzie's dad, if you're listening, this is not judgment.
No way,
going
we respect
fishing. This is just
we respect your hobbies. Absolutely. It's just our personal proclivity. No, you fish on. Fish on.
So for sure. When we do these podcasts, we rarely know what we're going to talk about in advance, and it usually takes the length of a podcast for us to even come up with what we're going to talk about before we hit record.
That's true. That happens sometimes. Yes.
Adam came with the heat.
I brought the heat
on this call minutes ago, and Adam said, "Hey, I have an idea," and it was a killer idea.
Yeah. So we all remember where we were, or maybe we don't, but we all remember where we were when John Travolta, I believe it was at the Academy Awards, I'm pretty sure it was at the Oscars, mispronounced Idina Menzel and said the wickedly talented Adele Dazeem.
So,
which remains.
Gotta pause you there. It's the funniest thing for anybody who knows who Idina Menzel is, the star of the Broadway musical Wicked, and like a star of so many. She's an iconic performer.
Yeah.
It's like you know who Idina Menzel is, but you could tell in his like face that when he said wickedly, he didn't know what was coming out next.
Yeah, true. It's like, I'm sure, obviously, it's the Academy Awards. He was reading off a teleprompter, but even that. Like, even, like, the combination of, like, the nerves of not knowing the, like, not having a like, an intimate knowledge of the person that you are about to introduce, just, like, seeing that happen, and then just the funniest possible mispronunciation, and the funniest possible interpretation of Idina Menzel is Adele Dazeem.
Exactly. But here's the thing. He didn't performatively struggle. He didn't look like, uh-oh, I don't know exactly. He said it with such confidence and with his whole chest that you're like,
correct.
Is her name Adele Dazeem?
Exactly right. He said it as though Idina Menzel was the mispronunciation. What was in the teleprompter was the mistake.
Yeah. Exactly. It was spectacular. And I remember Harvard sailing team, we were on the road or something like the next week doing college shows, and we found this John Travolta pronunciation app. It was like not even apps yet. It was like a website where it was like, type in your name, and this is how John Travolta would say it on a website.
Amazing. Amazing.
And it was just a thing. And so it's the 10-year anniversary of him calling her Adele Dazeem, and even Idina Menzel on her Instagram page sent a happy birthday happy 10th birthday to Adele Dazeem.
So
Idina
good.
Menzel sent so a 10-year good. Happy birthday message to Adele Dazeem. So yeah. It hasn't died. It is only getting stronger with age.
It's the joke that keeps on giving. I mean, like, I, like you, I'm a sucker. Like, one of my sort of, like, go-to silly, like, 100% success rate tickles my funny bones are little mispronunciations like that. But that was just such an epic beauty of a mispronunciation. And like you said, delivered with such gusto, such Travoltian confidence and swag, that it was the best thing that's ever happened to me.
And the show just went on.
Yeah.
Adele.
I mean, just like the amount when I see in text Idina, Idina Menzel, Menzel, the leap to get from that to Adele Dazeem is so, you have to go
Dazeem.
Through so many
Dazeem.
Yeah.
You were saying how you like little mispronunciations or sometimes even intentional mispronunciations.
Yes, yeah.
So the New York Knicks, Adam, our beloved New York Knicks.
Love them so much.
They have a vibe this year. They actually seem fun and cool and pretty easy to root for. These last couple of games, there's been injuries, yada, yada. But like the spirit of this roster
is a vibe. Oh, yeah.
And two of the players that really make it fun, just like fun to watch, are Jalen Brunson, our star point guard.
Yep.
And his college teammate, Josh Hart.
Yeah, they're like best buds.
They now have a podcast. They have a podcast called The Roommates Show.
Yes, that's so great.
And they had Dante DiVincenzo, who's another New York Knick and also a guy who they went to college with on the on their podcast this past week.
Okay, cool.
And it was revealed that Josh Hart likes to mispronounce every single player on his team's names.
I like it.
He will only call them by the wrong name, by like one letter, but every single one of them.
And what a goofball.
They were talking about it on the most recent podcast, and they went through each player, and each one he would say what he calls them, and Adam, it is
joy. I gotta check that out. That is my exact wheelhouse.
Yes, it's deeply funny. It's very deeply funny.
So good. So good.
So in the spirit of Adele Dazeem and the 10-year anniversary of it, Adam said, What do you say we talk about some other famous live television mistakes?
Yeah, little gaffes, little bloopers, little whoopsie daisies that happened in front of the world. Why not?
Performance-based. Not like the lights went out. Not like the camera cut to the wrong person. But a performance-based live
whoopsie-doopsie. Yep.
I mean, you come from a theater background, Adam, where if someone screws up, they're just out there. There's no safety net. It is
twisting in the wind, baby. Twisting in thine wind.
Twisting in thine wind.
So,
all right, we'll go to the first act break. When we come back, we'll start talking about some of the more popular ones, but I'll lead with a story about a performance that you and I did where about to twist in thine wind.
I know what you're
All right, so maybe Adam will tell the story. We'll go to an act break. I'll make the sound of wind, and then we'll come back.
Okay, perfect. Welcome back to the No Joke Podcast. Today, in honor of Adel Dazim's 10th birthday, we are talking about public live television mess-ups, basically.
Yep.
Yeah, live television gaffes. Yeah.
Good. Adam, you and I have not discussed in the act break the story that I was going to tell. Do you want to take a guess at the story I was going to tell?
Well, I have a guess. I don't know if it is the one. Does it relate to rapping economists?
Dude.
Okay. Does it relate? Does it by any chance?
I was ready to. I like. I'm not suicidal. But I was walking on stage. I was like, I think it's better if I just kill myself.
If I were dead, this would go better. Yeah.
Because I don't know. Okay, Adam, tell the story, and I'll fill in the blanks.
Can we reverse it? Can you drive the boat and maybe
you
I can fill
I,
in the gaps?
Okay, you and great. I were hired. We were these rapping economists. It's well-tread territory. Keynes and Hayek. We would rap about econ. Okay.
Okay. All right, everyone, just trust us. That's not the funny part. That's just
that's
the
not
setup.
Even remotely the funny part. And more often than not, we'd be hired to make these viral videos that would be shared widely.
Oh, big time.
And more often than not, and let's just say every word, we didn't know what it meant. We just learned the sounds of the words and would say them and assume that the econ people liked it. And they did.
We're rapping about macroeconomics, microeconomics, sluices. We're rapping about crazy economic theories, 19th century. We don't know what the hell we're talking about, but like Travolta, are selling it.
And we're selling it. You think we know. We don't know.
Yeah. No, we don't
so
know anything.
So in a video format, you can get stuff wrong. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, totally.
They'll edit it
no,
out.
Doesn't
they'll find the
yeah,
good
yeah, yeah.
takes.
For sure. Okay.
Then we got hired to go to CUNY, City University of New York. We had to fly in for a live performance of Keynes and Hayek. Hard enough to remember the lyrics to the songs, of which
completely.
I think they may have even changed some lyrics to make it CUNY accessible, whoever we were rapping to.
And 500 people, economists who would know every single thing we were referencing. And let me pause here to also say, these songs, this isn't like one 16-bar verse and Billy does a 16-bar verse. These songs were like seven-minute opuses consisting
like 8,000 words.
Yeah.
Like 8,000 word essay, like seven pages of Microsoft Word.
Correct. So a lot to remember, a lot to say. Yeah.
Okay, and if that wasn't enough, we had to do like a scene before that ushered in the song.
A little prologue. Yeah.
Yes.
A little
prologue. Adam has acting training. Okay? So Adam has at least like a bag of tricks to rely on, something that maybe ways that he's learned. I'm just trying to explain where the difference lied. So I grew up with Harvard Sailing Team where even if you didn't necessarily know your blinds, backstage you could run them. You had just a certain superpower. You felt comfortable through osmosis, okay?
Strength in numbers.
But in the staging of this performance, Adam had to be stage left and 75 feet away, I was stage right. And as soon as I went to my station, stage right, I forgot everything.
Everything. Gone.
And as you know, my brother-in-law was there. Our catering buddies were there. 500 economists who could call bullshit in a second were there.
In a second, dude. Yes, for sure.
And it was my job. And the two people who knew the least about what was about to happen was you and me.
Yes, correct. Exactly right. Two comedians.
So I had to walk out on stage. There was hoopla, Adam. There was hoopla.
Legitimate hoopla.
Like celebrities. We were like celebrities.
It's a funny little niche in our creative, a funny little chapter in our creative lives, for sure. Yes, we were. Yeah.
Long story short, they say like the reason you're here, it's Keynes and Hayek. And I remember we both had to take 3 steps up to get on stage. And I just wanted to die. I didn't know anything, and I had like 7,000 words to say.
Yes. And I mean,
I just remember like the first word was like, there he is.
Yeah.
Hayek.
Yeah. But somehow it all went fine. Like it all went fine. How? How?
You know how? You honestly want to know how? You and you're going to like brush it off. You did know most of what you needed to say. And I was able to like follow your lead.
Yeah.
Like you actually held my hand like a big brother. And it was just like, follow me, pal. But
there, what was that show that they would do at UCB sometimes where, like, it was an improv show where the whole premise was that, like, half the people knew the lines to the
water.
Yeah, Gravid Water. Exactly. It was like a little bit like that, where it was like, I knew the lines to the play, you didn't, and that was that was just the thing. But yeah, that was hilarious. There is a certain panic. There is like an adrenaline panic cocktail where it's like live performance. You're not exactly sure. I remember doing a Shakespeare play when we were at NYU, and Clayton and I had the first lines of A Winter's Tale, which is like a 3.5 goddamn hour long Shakespeare play, which is like, and yes, we'd been rehearsing for months. And yes, in theory, we all knew all of our lines, but you know how life goes, how like live performance and nerves and adrenaline and all the rest. And Clayton and I were just backstage, and he was like, literally the lights were about to come up and we were about to like step out there and be like, five changes of the watery moon have passed for you, and just like begin this like 3.5 hour long concert, basically.
Yes.
And Clayton was just like, literally like turned to me, and not even with panic in his eyes, but just sort of like a matter of fact, he was just like, how are we going to do this? How?
Right.
How are we going to do this? And I was like, I don't know. I'm not totally sure. But we did
it. It's a nightmare.
It can be a full nightmare. Like,
the play that you're referring to probably had 60 people in the crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
The performance that we did had like 500 people that we don't care about.
We don't care.
Outside of my brother-in-law.
We don't. It's outside of town. Correct.
But yeah. Then you put it on national television.
Yeah, stakes get higher.
Example of a live television gaffe.
Oh.
And this was like, this predates probably a lot of our listeners, but yeah. Ashley Simpson on Saturday Night Live.
Right. I have a vague cultural memory of this, but in my memory, and you please correct me if I'm wrong here, Bill, is that because the whole thing about Saturday Night Live, as we know, it's live. And
it is
sort
really
of,
truly live.
It is really truly live. Exactly. And those musical performances, and again, Bill, you entered SNL, so you have a vastly more intimate knowledge of the process than I do. But those are real deal live performances for real. And in a way,
You perform.
You're singing the song.
You show it off.
And like, I think in the music circles, like doing SNL, one of the reasons it's such a feather in one's cap is because it sort of like proves your live bona fides in a way. It's like you did this live for real. Like, so that is sort of part of the appeal and the sort of mystique of the musical performance as an SNL. But if I'm not mistaken,
yes.
Please, Bill, go.
And so what was great about this was she was lip-syncing. Let's just get it out of the way now.
Which is already like a big no-no. Yeah.
And she's the sister of Jessica Simpson. Like, this is such pop times.
Yeah,
where it was just like, if one member of the family has achieved pop success, their kid, brother, or sister will get a bite at the apple. They'll get a shot.
Like Nick Carter and Backstreet Boy Carter, et cetera.
Yes.
Just like
rest in peace.
Or whatever they are. Rest in peace. Yes.
Yes. And there's others. Britney Lynn Spears, Jamie Lynn Spears.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was just a thing that was happening.
That's right.
But what happened was the vocal track that she was lip syncing to like went out.
Oh, boy.
It just went out. In the middle of the song.
Oh,
and
boy. Brutal.
She couldn't sing because her microphone wasn't on.
Oh,
because
brutal.
It wasn't designed to do that. And everything just stopped. And she awkwardly stood there. Everything stopped.
Oof.
She just stood there.
Oof.
And then she did like an awkward, like a little kid dance where they don't know what to do. Almost like you have to pee. And you just do like a little dance.
Oof.
And then she sprinted away.
Oh,
she just ran
goodness.
Away. And then the cameras held, and it was dead quiet.
Oh, great.
And then they just faded to a picture of the host. It was just cringy.
Yeah, that's about as cringy as you get. I have a couple follow-up questions. So, one is, like, she was pure lip syncing. It's not like she was even live singing over a vocal track. She was
straight up
Milli Vanilli lip syncing. Okay, fine.
Yes.
Do you, or am I really sort of like tinfoil hat conspiracy theorizing here? Do you think that there was any nefarious sabotaging at play where the SNL people want the show to go well. They don't want to embarrass this poor woman. They're not cutting out the vocal track to expose her as a lip syncer, right? They're not doing that.
Yeah, that would be bad business, I think, for them,
too. Yeah, that's horrible.
You know,
right?
Like, A, that would be like sabotaging their relationship to the record label that she was on. And also any further musician that they're like, did I do anything to like displease the producers of SNL? Will they like sabotage my set? There's no value.
No way. It was a genuine mistake. It was a genuine technical hiccup on the part of Saturday Night Live and a genuine lip sync disaster on the part of Ashley Simpson.
And the guitarists were still like strumming their guitars, but no guitar was playing. It was just just one of those. Oof. And that pretty much ended her singing career. That was pretty much it.
Bummer, man. Bummer. Just couldn't bounce back. Yeah, that was, I don't even know, I don't think I saw that live. I'm pretty sure I did not, but I was aware of that incident, and I think I probably saw the clips and stuff. But, just brutal live gaffe. Another one that you and I were together for, although now that I'm remembering, this was a Super Bowl halftime show. And
Springsteen.
Springsteen. If I'm recalling correctly, this was the Super Bowl, and Bill, you're going to have to help me fill in the details here, where I believe, was on the subway coming to meet you during halftime. I believe you and Ben Craw were watching this together. And
a few others, yes.
And a few others. And there was a fire alarm went off in your apartment?
No, a fire.
There was a fire.
Like literally 3 minutes after the live mistake that you're telling us about.
Yes, exactly. Okay, that was the timeline. Okay, so Springsteen is performing at the halftime show. The halftime show, much like, and again, Billy, help me sort of like figure this out exactly, but, and I believe you were the one that told me this, that no Super Bowl halftime show, unlike Saturday Night Live, the Super Bowl halftime show has such a big audience and the stakes are so high and the margin for error is so low that those are all, if not lip synced, then at least sung over a vocal track, right? Like they're Okay, great.
Sung over. Every instrument, no instrument can be played live. Like even the artist H-E-R, who performed she like gave Usher like a 1 minute respite and had like a huge electric guitar. Her doing her electric guitar solo didn't match the set.
Exactly.
Like it wasn't egregious, whereas the one that you're about to tell us about with Bruce Springsteen. But
yes.
You have to protect the performance.
Got to protect the performance. The Super Bowl is such a big deal. Everyone's watching, so it's like they can't mess around. They don't want to leave anything to chance. Bruce, the boss, who we love, beloved, everyone loves him. No one doesn't love the boss, like whatever. Yes. He was shredding. They had a camera level. Yeah. Down on the
Moment.
Yeah, for this moment when Bruce
resting
was
on the stage.
Resting on the stage, and I guess the choreography was such that he was gonna like do the classic slide on his knees toward the camera, like awesome slide on his knees move. But
doing
he did
an electric guitar solo something. Like, it was just like it was set up to be this like epic like crescendo where he was gonna slide right like and land a foot in front, like framed up perfectly.
Framed up perfect.
The camera.
Some of the calculations went awry. Bruce maybe started his jog or his descent a little bit early, and he essentially
I think he slid late.
And he slid late, and 75 million or 100 million, however many people are watching at home, got a full frontal view of Bruce Springsteen's crotch coming like a
the
proper
whole screen was black because of his black jeans. His crotch jeans just went right into the lens, and then he like bounced back and he made a face like a toddler who just pooped his pants.
Oops.
He was like,
oopsie.
Like, he was so embarrassed.
I know. He crotched all of America because he like fully crotch bonked the camera. That was just supposed to be sort of an awesome sort of like low angle framed up shot. But that was, and again, Super Bowl, biggest audience, period. And it was just like everyone was watching. Everyone
that
got the
like
crotch 15 shot.
15-minute window for my house was so epic because that half ended with a football player named James Harrison catching an interception on like the 1 yard line and running it back 99 yards. And then it was halftime.
Wow.
That was arguably one of the coolest plays we've ever seen in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Then it's like Springsteen crotch dive
crotch attack
into the camera. And now we're like, what else could happen? Yeah. This is all so insane. And then knock, knock, knock. Men in firemen show up and they're like, you've got to get out of your house right now. Your building's on fire. And we're like, what is happening?
Yeah, that was an awesome 30 minutes of life.
Truly great. Truly great.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was amazing.
One of the more common live television gaffes or mistakes occur on the news. What do you say, you and I, come back from a second act break and maybe talk about one or two news
of course,
we remember?
A whole YouTube subgenre of life is like YouTube news bloopers, obviously.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah, yes. There's like the also the like – well, we'll get to them in the third act. We'll get to them.
Great.
So,
okay, perfect.
I'll make the sound of wind.
Okay, perfect. Okay, great.
And we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the No Joke Podcast. We're talking about live TV mistakes. That was once again the sound of wind, which is either relaxing or ominous, depending on the context. I found that one very relaxing, Bill. Very calming.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Very soothing, I thought. Yeah.
Our friend Clayton, who you mentioned was in the Shakespearean play with you, loves a good mistake on television.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Loves people falling down, loves kids falling off of slides, loves women falling off of bikes. Just can't get enough of the stuff.
The hardest I've ever seen him laugh in, or any human being laugh in life, was he and I were in a hotel room for some reason. Maybe it was an HST thing or maybe not. I can't remember. But we were watching that show Wipeout, which was basically designed for Clayton. I mean, that's a show that was conceived, designed, and executed for our friend Clayton. And he was apoplectic, in tears, could not speak. He was laughing so hard at just grown men and women getting gently bonked by big, like, you know, rubber jousts and falling into some water. He could not get enough. Yeah.
Remember me, you, and Clayton and my apartment on East 63rd Street watching just super cuts of people falling down and getting hit by stuff. And he was like you said, he was like out of breath. He couldn't – his like face was cherry red.
Can't walk. He can't walk. He's laughing too hard.
One of Clayton's favorites is like – looks like early 2000s news – a news desk, local news.
Yeah.
And it's a man and a woman, two broadcasters. And the woman, it's the woman's story to tee off. And she says, I'll never forget the guy's name. She's like, big news from Mount Everest. Eric Weyenmayer becomes the first person to scale Everest. And get this, he's gay. Excuse me, he's not gay. He's blind. It's the pause when she says, and he's gay, holds. Not gay, blind.
Blind.
Very different.
So hilarious. So different. There's something about news bloopers are particularly great because of the newscast tone of voice. Like that they have
good call.
It's just like I feel like that's like 80% of why it's so good is because newscasters by design need to sound authoritative, in control, and expert-like. Like that's the whole point. Like
it really is interesting that they all talk like that.
Yeah, that's
who was the first one to say like this is how you will talk. This is how they will receive the news.
Yeah, exactly. Like there is such a culture baked in cultural news broadcast voice, and it's serious. It is plain. It is matter of fact. It's clear. It's like that's the whole idea. Like you need to communicate clearly and authoritatively. So anytime they just make. Anytime the they slightest. Mess up. Oh, yeah. It's just the greatest thing ever.
There was another tunnel that we went down, and there's two that come to mind.
Yeah.
One was, what do you call it? It's like a QVC-type show.
Oh,
they're just trying to sell.
Yes. Yeah, infomercial.
And this one was trying to sell. This video gave us a phrase that we still kind of say today.
Yes, exactly.
And this one was, do you know which one I'm talking about? The katanas?
Samurai. Oh, yeah. Katana blades. Exactly. Katana blades. Oh, yeah.
They were this guy, you just see it coming from a mile away.
This is a good one. Everyone might want to look this one up. This is good.
Yeah. So everyone's probably seen this, but there's a man who is here to sell katanas, like a long Japanese blade.
Already we're off on a weird foot. Like that's being sold on QEC. Sword.
He's flanked by a man who really wants to learn more about katanas.
Exactly. Exactly.
And the salesman of the katana, it's his job to prove that this is not just any katana. This is like the best katana.
Indestructible.
And this katana, are you guys tired of your katanas breaking, shattering when you're trying to stab a samurai soldier?
Exactly.
Does that frustrate you when your samurai blade doesn't pierce the skin of the man you're attacking?
Exactly.
Well, he's here to tell you this won't break.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Now, they didn't have any samurai soldiers in the studio at the time. So
the
only way that he could show the strength of the sword was to whack it against the edge of a counter.
Literally just whack it on the counter, period. And he was like, see? And he gave it sort of a couple whacks. And then, like Billy said, we could all see it coming. You didn't need to be rocket scientist.
It broke.
Oh, it broke. It broke.
But where did the tip go at?
And the piece of the tip of the katana blade, which, although it may not be strong, is sharp, sure, impaled this poor man. Impaled.
The salesman.
The salesman.
The man who is here to tell you that this will never break. And you'll find a theme and when you hear the next video as well. Yeah. He got stabbed by his own katana, and he just dropped.
Yeah, it was
the
amazing.
Floor.
Yes, amazing.
Out of frame, behind the counter that did him in already, he just dropped down.
Correct.
And the joy of these things is the audio is still on.
Oh, God.
And he said, and we still quote this phrase to date, he said, "I'm hurt. I'm hurt big time.
Big time. It got
big
me,
Big time. And when you said big time, big time became the newest phrase in our arsenal. Like when we were living in New York City, we said big time.
All the time. Yeah. We said big time, huge time. And it was partly because of this video. Yeah.
Oh, mostly because of this video.
Yeah.
And the man who knew nothing about katanas suddenly became a health expert.
Yes.
And he looked into the camera with full seriousness and he said, "We're going to need emergency surgery in the studio right now."
Right now. And also, the other beautiful part about QVC is that, like, those cameras are they must just be on, like, a.
They're robotic.
They're totally robotic, and they're just on like a pattern where it's like slow pan left to right, slow pan right to left, slow zoom in. So like as this man is fighting for his life on the floor of the studio being impaled by his own katana blade, and other guy is begging the live TV audience for a doctor, basically, emergency surgery, the QVC cameras are still QVC cameraing the whole time and just sort of panning gently left to right and right to left, and it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous moment. It's gorgeous. Yes, it is.
I'm hurt big time.
I'm hurt big time. It got me good, Odile.
Big time.
Yeah,
big
really
time. It's like not even that wacky an expression, but in that context, it just gave
it
new life.
Yeah, it was new life, exactly. Really, really
big time.
It got
big
me big time. Yeah.
Oh.
Really,
another video
really
that
good.
Comes to mind very similar is Grape Stomp.
Oh, yeah, that was a classic. That's a classic. Yep, that's a classic.
An absolute classic.
Correct.
Do you want to set it up or should I?
Well, this is a news segment about a vineyard, and it's like some, you know, what are these like? And we are going to throw it over to Tim, who's on location in Napa Valley at a vineyard. And this guy is interviewing a woman who is stomping on grapes, like, you know, that's a thing.
Making
to
wine.
Like, wait, making wine and barefoot in this big barrel. And she has a kind of a – she's a little bit of an aggressive personality. The guy's trying to interview her, and she's, like, rude for a second. She's, like he's asking her a question. She's stopping
excitable.
On these – she's very excited and very excitable.
She's not mean or rude.
No.
She's, like, so excitable and trying so hard to sell how fun and easy
how fun
this is,
it is
that she doesn't know how carried away she's gotten.
She's getting a little carried away. So at one point, I think she either shushes or maybe even says, like, stop to the interviewer.
Oh, she does.
She does. Right, he's like, so what is it? What is it like to? And she's like, stop! And then she like keeps stomping, and then horrible. And then at one point, she sadly live TV tumbles out of the barrel and hits the ground at such an awkward angle, and it makes such a again. She's mic'd up, so the audio is almost the 90% of the comedy of these clips. Like you were saying, the audio is so intimate because like she has a mic ostensibly like connected right to her like lapel or whatever, and she hits the ground, and it makes such a devastating thud, crunch, whack, smack, whack.
Can I make? Can I?
Please,
can I
please, Bill.
Shot?
Please.
So it's worth noting that these, and everyone's seen this, so I don't have to say it, but the where they're standing, it's on this like elevated stage. Man-made elevated stage that's like not very strong.
No.
So she falls like 4 feet to the ground. She doesn't just fall out of this little bucket.
Right.
And this is what it sounds like.
Yes.
And
she's
and as one is in these type of videos, she's now out of camera shot. She's now fallen she's out of frame.
Correct.
And this is what it sounded like. Ooh, yee, ooh, yee. Which is so unnatural. Like, we've all had the wind knocked out of us, but we don't make that sound. But this woman and her hyperkinetic energy, that's how she showed pain.
Exactly. It was like an opera. It was like operatic moaning and groaning. And like she was in, you couldn't even tell if it was pain, embarrassment, like
pain.
Just like, yeah,
you could tell it was pain. She was in pain.
She was in pain. And like, imagine being a news producer in that context. It's like, when do you cut away? Like, what is disrespectful? Like, as I'm sure as a live news producer, you're always a little bit expecting the unexpected, and like, you're always ready to cut away back to studio emergency style if need be. But it was just, it's one of the all-time great news bloopers. I'm sure many people have seen
real,
it. Great
like, stuff. They really, when it's the news and it's like one of these, like we threw to this segment type thing, as opposed to the QVC versions, there's a cherry on top. And the cherry on top is they cut back to the broadcasters and they have to show remorse and
laugh.
And they were just like, ooh, we hope she's okay. There was a murder on State Street, and you have to keep it moving.
Exactly. God, it's good. It's really, really – it's a really, really good one.
I have two more examples that come to mind.
Hit me, Bill.
This one is also the news. I wonder if you've seen it. It was about two joggers running in the snow and how the snow is the perfect
I don't know if I'm familiar with this
run.
One. Okay. I don't know if I know this
Okay.
one. Okay. Great. Hit me.
So this is – there is a light dusting of snow, let's call it in Portland.
Okay. Great.
And the news broadcasters send it out to the weather team who's on location.
Yeah.
And there's just, it's like a beautiful shot.
Great.
And two joggers run into frame and they're like, hey, excuse me, you want to talk about the recent snow? And they're like, yeah, sure. And they're just like, that like esoteric, sweet, crunchy, kind of like so sweet that you're almost like, are you real?
Yeah,
like, you're
totally.
Almost like a little like, okay, like dial it down a little bit.
Yes.
She was like, you're jogging in the snow. Isn't that dangerous? And the it's a girl and a man. And the girl's like, actually, running in like 1 inch of snow is like the best possible texture for running. It's really easy on the bones and it helps you glide and it feels like flow. And she's just saying all these things.
Yes, okay.
You know, everyone's eyes are rolling.
Yes.
And she's like, okay, great. And she's like, well, have a great run. And they like, off they go.
Oh,
and
God.
It's like 5 steps.
Oh,
and
no.
She busts ass. Violent, like a bad, like on the tailbone where it's like, she probably started crying.
Oh, God. Oh,
cut back
God.
To the studio. And it's, oh.
I hope she's okay.
Oh.
Jesus, God, that's so good. Yeah,
I got one more, unless you have one that comes to
please,
mind.
Please, no, please, Bill, hit me. God, right.
It's
so funny.
It's the Oscars. The Oscars are this Sunday. I say we end on the biggest one.
Good.
La La Land.
Yeah, this is the one that was coming to my mind. This was a good moment. Yeah.
How about that, Adam? You want to set it up?
Yes, this was whatever Academy Awards this was. Maybe, I don't know. Was this a decade ago already or whatever? Moonlight and La La Land was, 2015 or whatever it was. And it was Best Picture, last award of the night. I believe it was Warren Beatty and maybe Faye Dunaway, two real legend. It was definitely Warren Beatty, for sure. And someone else equally iconic, like full Hollywood legend status. And
it's the last one of the night, right?
Best Picture.
Best Picture of the year. Best Picture.
This is the crown jewel of the Academy Awards. They opened up the envelope, and La La Land had been kind of a polarizing movie, but it also won a bunch of awards, and it was like Moonlight was also the great movie that year. Like, those are the two that were sort of in the running. Great. And they opened up the thing, and they were like, Best Picture, and the Oscar goes to La La Land. I was like, whoa, crazy. Like, wow. And then, if I'm not mistaken, the producers, all the people from La La Land, got up on stage, like, to collect their trophy or whatever, and then it was
because they were told they won.
Because they were told told that they won. And then I believe it was one of the La La Land producers, like some bald guy, like some guy.
Yes.
Took the card, looked at it, and then he got on the mic. This some Jared or Jeremy or whatever, there and was like, actually, it's Moonlight. It's Moonlight.
And like, this isn't a joke. This isn't a gag.
Exactly. Confusion everywhere. Everyone's confused. No one isn't really sure if they're joking. He was like, no, I'm serious. It's Moonlight. So now the Moonlight team comes on stage and the La La Land team has to get off and Warren Beatty is embarrassed. And it was just like,
fault was it?
Yeah, was it ever revealed whether he just sort of read it wrong or whether the wrong movie was printed on the envelope? Did we ever know the answer to that?
I mean, how would Jared or Jeremy know that it wasn't actually
of course.
La La Land was...
That's so interesting. I feel like,
my guess is that Warren Beatty got it wrong, but he's such royalty that they didn't want to throw him
under the bus. Yeah, that they didn't want to embarrass him, but I guess that's really the only thing. He just was like... Yeah, exactly. Like, he maybe just assumed La La Land was going to win, so it was already, like, in his mind, like, just say La La Land. It's going to be La La Land. Maybe he even practiced saying, and the Oscar goes to La La Land backstage. Maybe he even, like, practiced it once or twice just to, like, get it out of his mouth a couple times. What a mess. Academy Award. Yeah, exactly. That was a big old goof. Goof him up.
Yeah.
Yep, for sure. For sure. Yep.
Oh, man.
Love it.
Doing it live is a dangerous game, pal.
It's dangerous, guys. It's dangerous. But ultimately very rewarding. Yeah.
Yes, for us, the viewers.
For us, the viewers,
we love it.
Your mistakes are our treats. They're treats to us.
We love that stuff.
We love it. Keep messing up. Yeah.
Well.
Wow.
Good job, Ad.
Good
Episode
job, Bill.
376 is in the books.
Good job, buddy. We did it live.
Live television mistakes.
Perfect. Great.
And for the live television mistakes episode, I am Billy Scafuri.
I'm Adam Lustig.
And like always, we will try to talk to you for a third consecutive week.
Adele Dazzy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.